ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 3, Text 27. Prakritehe kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudha atma karta aham iti manyate prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma karta aham iti manyate prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma karta aham iti manyate. The spirit's soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Purport. Two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body, for due to his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimurhatma karta hamiti manyate. A common question asked by devotees, or people who are trying to be devotees, aspiring devotees, is that why don't we make advancement as much as we would expect to? We've been chanting so many years and still we're not as advanced as we think we should be. Well, this verse gives the clue. This well-known word, ahankar, at least it's well-known among Hindus who are a little bit interested in philosophy, at least they know the word ahankara. Buddhists, and probably it's entering into English also with the and other Western languages, with the progressive creeping influence of more Buddhism actually than Hinduism. So ahankara, ahamkara, that which makes aham is the meaning of ahankara, that which gives the sense of I-ness, which makes us feel what is our identity. So the Buddhists or the impersonalists, they say you have to get free from ahankar. But actually we have to get free from what is Srila Prabhupada terms false ego. The sense that I am is not to be destroyed, but instead of thinking I am anything else but a servant of Krishna, we have to realize that I am the servant of Krishna. That's proper ahankar. Actually, there's no question of destroying the self or becoming free from the sense, or one can become free from the sense of I am, but that's just another phase of illusion. So, what makes our identity? How do we identify ourselves? Well, in this material world, every living being identifies with the body and the senses and the mind which go with that particular body, and thus we think, I am Indian. I'm not one of those damn Indians. Or, I am tall. I am short. I am the husband of this young woman or young man. It's quite possible nowadays. Don't laugh, you could be arrested. Not yet in India. The madness hasn't reached that extent. They're not quite up on the, you know, they're not quite up to date with the nonsense and degradation. I am an engineer. You know, someone says, I am an engineer. You don't think, well, that's a very egoistic statement. It's just you ask someone who they are, I'm an engineer. Or I am a shopkeeper. It didn't sound very egoistic. But it is, because it is an identity that is not real in the full sense of the term. It is an assumed identity. Sarvopadhi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchyate. Bhakti means to be free from all these false designations and to accept our designation that I am the servant of Krishna. All my senses are meant for serving Krishna. Otherwise, if we think, I'm an engineer, this is my husband, these are my children, I am Indian, then we think that our senses are meant for serving that identity. So, what we identify with, we take shelter of. Bhakti means to take shelter of Krishna. We find toward the end of Gita, actually just at the end of Krishna's, almost at the very end of his instructions, he says, yadahankaram ashritya nayotsya iti manyate. Because at the beginning, Arjuna had said, nayotsya, I'm not going to fight. And Krishna said, well, if you think at the end, after explaining all this, Krishna says that, well, if you want to say nayotsya, I'm not going to fight, that means you think you're being very good and very moral, but actually you're simply taking shelter of ahankar, false egoism. You're supposed to take shelter of me. Then Krishna says, mamekam sharanam raja. So ahankar, we take shelter of our identity. We fully identify with a false identity, which it doesn't actually exist. It's like a projection of a cartoon on a screen. It doesn't actually exist. It's just some projection of our imagination. I am an engineer. This is my body. I'm tall. I'm thin. I have this disease and that disease. It's all simply a projection. And then we project our desires, that what we want to be. We have what we are and then what we want to be, what we imagine we'd like to be. So this is all egoism. So everyone in this world is egoistic. But some people are more so than others. And we may say of someone in Hindi or Bengali, we'll say they're ahankari. They're very egoistic people. Like children. Among children, it's not that surprising. They become a little proud, you see. They want to show, I'm better than the other. I learn the lesson faster. And they become very proud. I know so much. But they're a little child. They know all, they're just in beginning education. They know almost nothing about anything. But because they know more than one or two other children around them, they say, oh, I know so much. But no educated person will take them seriously. See, I know how to multiply 3 by 3. Oh, see, and whoa. And he'll go home and tell his father, who's an engineer and doing... Actually, they don't do any calculations themselves. They just put it in the computer. But at least they know the mechanics of which calculations to make and all this kind of thing. So, now the boy, and then the father will say, oh, very good boy. But if he doesn't think as the child thinks, that they say, now I'm so... learned and intelligent. So this egoism among children, well, it's childish. Children can be indulged to a large degree in their foolishness. Children are expected to be foolish. But if someone remains like that throughout their life and they never grow out of that consciousness, and they have I'm better than you, and you just see what I'm doing, then it's childish in one way, definitely foolish, and unpleasant to everyone else around. Because generally as people get older, they become more realistic, and they see that, well, pretty much everyone knows how to multiply 3 by 3, and there's so many people in the world, and I'm really not that great. I mean, most people don't go through the mechanics of thinking like this, but it's just part of growing up. But many people, psychologically, they don't really grow up. Some people, they remain like that. Their ego keeps them going. It's like the urge to prove themselves better. If we see all the great people of the world, except the saintly people, what is it that drove them to their greatness? It was ego. To show them, especially like a politician, a soldier, Napoleon, what a big ego. Hitler, they wanted to expand all over. And put Napoleon, when he was going to get crowned by the Pope. So the Pope brings the crown and Napoleon takes it and puts it on his own head. Because actually the Pope had nothing to do with it. He was a self-made man. He came from an insignificant background and became emperor for a short time until he was completely smashed. But of course, the French people, they like to remember the victorious days, not the getting smashed days. So this egoism, it drives people I have to show I'm better. It's very common in most people, materialistic people. There's an English saying, keeping up with the Joneses. Which means that people are driven by the desire that the people living around them cannot be at a better position than themselves. So if the people next door get a new car, immediately, I got to get a new car. They're ahead of me. They're better than me. They're more prestigious. So this idea that I can't be seen to be inferior. It's a major consideration. Practically, what do we need for the body? The well-known saying, another of my famous quotes, which you may have heard, roti kapra makan, food, clothing, and shelter. Then why do people want a big house when you only need a small house? Why do they want 40 pairs of shoes when you can only wear one at a time? And of course, you can have different shoes for different usages, but it's hard to find anyone who lives such a variegated life that they actually can use 40 different kinds of shoes. I mean, you have like indoor slippers and bathroom slippers, and then here they're using for washing the pots these Wellington boots, and then you have running shoes, and running out, I didn't reach anywhere near 40 yet. So, why? Well, there's the desire for sense enjoyment that is there, but not only the desire for sense enjoyment, but to show oneself to others as being a more competent sense enjoyer than they are. Because that's the whole idea, to show that you're God, and God is the supreme enjoyer. So you have to, and no one's God, but you have to show yourself, to keep up your own illusion, and to keep yourself satisfied. But there's no satisfaction in it whatsoever. That you have to show yourself to be better. And people, they'll go to great, put themselves through so much difficulty, working hard, long hours to earn more money, so that they can drive home at night and park a car in their driveway, which is up to their expectations, so that they can, when they say hello to the neighbors, and they see it in their neighbor's face, trying to look happy but not happy because his car is not as good as yours. And the person feels sad, great satisfaction. Until the guy goes out and gets another new car, and it goes on. And on like this, keeping up with the Joneses. So this ambition drives people through life, and many people, and in modern India especially, tell people you have to be ambitious. You have to make something out of your life. You have to do something. Make your mark felt in the world. This ambition is just another name for ego, that's all. They say personality development is just ego development. It's just that's all. How to stand up on a stage and that's called personality development. To project yourself as someone who's very confident in the assembly of envious people who want to pull you down, and somehow you can impress them in such a way that they feel, quite good. So this ambition, egoism, it's all rajaguna, to show I am better. I'm a better enjoyer. And it's selfishness. It's all connected. Ego, to show I am better. I have got more things than you. I'm better than you. So this selfishness, egoism, it all comes under the banner ambition. And it's what drives modern society and makes it so miserable, because everyone's selfish. That's the basic principle. So the materialistic people, be ambitious, make something of yourself. It means be an egoistic pig. Be selfish, and that's considered very good. And we see in the modern age that people of character, no one cares for them. But if someone is an expert enjoyer and they have lots of money, like some big film star, and people, very great person. What is their greatness? They're almost always they're degraded in their character, highly puffed up. And people think, I'd like to be like that. So, therefore, Prabhupada he said, when one the mother of one of his disciples, who was a young man at that time, came, and she wasn't very happy with Prabhupada because her son had left university education to join the movement. But anyway, all the kids were leaving university education at that time. Prabhupada, to join Prabhupada or not. But she charged, one of the charges, I mean, she was somewhat polite. One of the charges she made against Prabhupada is, you see these people here, they're not ambitious. And one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples who was there, who was well known for butting in and saying things and not listening to what Prabhupada would say, he said that, no, well, actually they're spiritually ambitious. He didn't wait for Prabhupada to speak, he gave the reply. And Prabhupada said, no ambition. Not even spiritual. There's no such thing. No ambition. No ambition. Prabhupada equated ambition with non-devotion. So we see that people who are good at something, they generally tend to become proud. Prabhupada even wrote in one letter, he said, you preach to the students, they may be little proud, and anyway, that's all right, they deserve it. They have some right to be proud, I guess. People who are better at something than others, and they know it, and they want to show it. So people like that. There was Salvador Dali, who was somewhat well known in the West for making bizarre paintings. He would just openly say, "Yeah, I'm a genius." People, "I'm a genius." What for making some paintings? And that's all. John Lennon, of the Beatles fame. I don't know if the young kids nowadays even heard of him, but anyway, at that time he was very famous. He said, "Well, when I was a child, I always had this feeling that I was a genius, but people didn't recognize it." And he made a statement once that, "Now we are more than Jesus Christ," talking about the Beatles. Which in one sense, you could say it was true. The Beatles came in the newspaper a lot more than Jesus Christ did. But Jesus Christ's fame and popularity is going on, whereas Lennon is almost forgotten. Frank Sinatra, another household name. In India, they don't know. Just like, here we go again, Sachin Tendulkar. He's a household name in India, and except for cricket fans, maybe in Australia, I don't know Australia that much, but they have so many sports over there. Maybe he's well known in Australia. Is it? You went to Australia? No, but you happen to know that he's well known in Australia. It's a big thing, cricket in Australia also, is it? Yeah, I guess it must be. I don't know. I have been to Australia, but I didn't inquire about how much they're interested in cricket. So anyway, Frank Sinatra, known as an icon for his crooning, which means singing in a sentimental kind of way. Maybe his most famous song is called "My Way." "I did it my way." People really like that song. It sold millions and millions. "I did it my way." So we're told when his genitals ran out of power, he got some monkey testicles put on so he could keep on doing it my way with the help of some poor monkey who got castrated so he could go on doing things his way. So, I mean, just gross egoism. But that's considered like, I do it my way. That's considered like, wow, that's really good. And in America still, they have this illusion, people have the illusion that, you know, we're all independent and we're doing it our way. And the Marlboro advert, the man riding on a horse in the desert alone, and this illusion that, you know, yeah, we're all independent and we're all free and we're doing as we like. So this promoting egoism, although people are just manipulated by the mass media, the financial system, the educational system, but they have this egoistic thinking. Yeah, I see, you can go into Baskin Robbins and you can choose on your own any one of, how is it, 49 or 59 varieties of ice cream. I did it my way. I chose, my free choice. It's a free nation. See, we can either choose a Democratic candidate to choose your wars for you, or a Republican candidate to choose your wars for you. So, you have a lot of freedom, right? It's a free country. So this egoism that, you know, I'm better than others, I have to show others. Once I was on a train and there was a heart surgeon sitting next to me. He said, well, I saved so many lives. People worship me like God. So we often hear this. My children, both my sons are professors in America. We'll hear someone say that. Oh, my child's studying in America. You see, they like to show. You say, oh, really? Oh, his son's studying in America. Oh, really? Great. Very important person. His son's studying in America. Even in a very small circle, there may be someone who's just like, for instance, some minor sport, like, for instance, croquet, which is something similar to golf, I guess. But it's usually played by old people. It's, you know, you hit a ball and it goes into a hole and like that, but it's not over a long distance. So I guess they have the World Croquet Championships, and whoever is the best croquet player in the world, among the croquet players, you know, he's a big man or woman, whatever. Say, oh, when he comes into the croquet club, oh, it's the, or the, some people breed pigeons, and then they have pigeon races. So among the pigeon racing community, the best pigeon breeder, you know, he walks in and he's on the Pigeon Breeders magazine, his page picture will be on the front page, and so, oh, see what a big, you know, the world's, the greatest pigeon breeder in the history of the world. Among their own circle, they think it's, or someone walks in, you see, this is the president of Lithuania. You know, the whole country is less population than Salem District, but it's the president of Lithuania, and he gets a seat in the United Nations, and they have a vote and everything. President of Lithuania. So like this. It seems to me like this Rotary Club and Lions Club, they just formed it so that the people can come and they can praise each other like that, because they didn't get anyone to praise them, so they make a club in which they all praise each other. So people like that. And even dogs and cows and elephants and horses, they also have their ego. The head cow, she knows this, she's in a group, she's ahead, and everyone else knows it. And if any of the other Matajis get out, you know, she'll
knock them out of place. She has her place. It's usually like second. They go in a line. She usually comes like second, like she has the, like the president goes in his motorcade, and they have someone in front, and then most of them behind them. So like that. Even, you know, I mean, there's so many examples. I remember this is in the early 1980s. I was supposed to be trying to get Prabhupada's books translated into different languages, like language Tibetan, Newari, Lao, Khmer, all these obscure languages. So we didn't have any devotees, and we had to try and find someone who would translate it, and then we had to try and find someone to check it, and actually, and I was also overseeing Nepali and Thai, and all, it was in Prabhupada Swami's sub-zone, you could say. And with devotees and non-devotees, it's really difficult, because no one would ever accept that there's anything wrong with my translation. You can't get, obviously, especially with a non-devotee translating, you have to have someone to translate it back and see. But no one would accept, how could you even imagine there's anything, there could be anything even resembling a slight fault in my translation? It was almost everyone, the devotees also. You get two or three people to translate, and each one of them would say, no, the other one's translation is no good. And, you know, it's very difficult. I don't know any of the languages. I don't even know how to read them. I never even heard of them until I was asked to get the books translated in those languages. And you're dealing with, you know, all these big egos, and, you know, I just want to get some books there so people can take benefit. But actually, everyone should be. No one should think I'm Krishna. If he can think like that, anyone else who thinks I'm perfect, everything I do is correct in all respects, it's simply imitation of Krishna, egoism. Sometimes people say that my writing is good. Well, the major reason for that is Prabhupada's mercy, Krishna's mercy. On a practical level, I nowadays don't print anything without getting it checked thoroughly and critiqued. You have to be ready for someone to say, hey, come on, this statement doesn't make sense, or it's wrongly formed, and you have to be ready to change it. Because it's, if you think it's my writing, then it's not, it may be your writing, but it's not your service to Krishna. Then this is my ego. This is a manifestation of my ego. And they praise the artist, like Salvador Dali, all this. What is it? On the screen is just they've vomited their ego, that's all. That's all. And people think, oh, magnificent. Because they're expertly expressing their ego. And people love this. So, and those who are egoistic, they say, don't you understand? No. You become greatly hurt. How could you even imagine? I translated it. I painted it. So if one does some service, it's supposed to be service for Krishna, but you're just thinking, well, how great I am, then others may praise us, but Krishna won't be pleased. Then what's the use, actually? It may look very good, but what's the use? Krishna doesn't need our service, nothing. We have simply got the opportunity to serve Krishna, that's all. But if we think, well, I'm doing so much Even like that Rotary Club or Lions Club, people, they like, because they do some welfare work like building bus shelters so that the people there go to work in their factories can have a bus shelter so when it rains they don't get sick, so they can go on working in their factories. And then they put a big sign. The sign is bigger than the bus shelter, built, put by the Rotary Club or something like that. So they do some welfare work. And they like to show that they're very good. But the whole purpose is just so that people will praise them. That's all. You must have seen, you're with Para in England, all these do-gooders, they're very concerned that they be known for all the good that they do. This drawing on my stock of personal memories again. Years ago in Bangladesh, there was one devotee of sorts from, I think she was from America, and she gave a little money for building some building, supposed to be a school or something, in one village in Bangladesh. And then she made a, even before it was completed, she made a movie of it, of herself walking around the school with all the village people. And then she went back to the West and she was showing that everywhere. And the movie was called The Angel of Bengal. She hadn't really done anything, but people from that distance, they don't know what you're doing. So you can show yourself and advertise yourself as being a great welfare worker. You do so much good for others. So often people, yeah, another, years ago, there was, again, years ago, on in the past. So one godbrother of mine, he told me he was in contact with some businessmen in Bangalore, and one of them, he was a self-made man, and he'd become rich, and he got all that he needed, and now he needed some prestige. This is how my godbrother said. So he's building a charitable school, and he wanted this devotee to be on the advisory board or something. He was an American devotee, so, you know, if you have on your advisory board an American, it's more prestigious. So now he's got everything that money can buy him, and now, as my godbrother put it, he's buying prestige, buying a good name like this. So often people who they like to appear good than actually be good, but it's all ahankar. Just see me. I'm doing so much. I'm doing so much to help others. But they don't know that actually to be good means to surrender to Krishna. That's the real meaning of good. That's why Krishna said to Arjuna, if you don't follow what I say, then it's simply ahankar. Kartahamitim ahankar avimudhatma. Out of ahankar we become a great fool and you think, I am doing. But what can we do actually? We can desire. And if Krishna allows, that desire may be fulfilled, that's all. Otherwise we have no power to do anything. But we think, I am doing. Krishna is this upadrashtanumantacha. He sees our desires and some things he allows. All right, you rascal, you become king until someone assassinates you. So for some time you can have the power. But then he is bharta bhokta maheshvaraha. He's not only upadrashta ananumanta, he's not only seeing and allowing, but he is the support of all this material energy. He is the enjoyer. He is the actual controller. We can only have the illusion of being the enjoyer. And Krishna allows us to enjoy. Or I am the doer. But actually, Krishna is the one who is overseeing everything. We cannot, we have this illusion that I am doing, but we don't realize that we cannot do anything unless Krishna allows. Another form of, another way people are puffed up is not because of anything they did in this life, but because of some advantages accrued from a previous life. As Kunti Devi says, Janmaishvarya Shuta Shribhir Edamana Madapuma Naivahatyabhidhatum Vai Tvam Akinchana Gochara. People who from a previous life, they get the qualifications of respectable birth, opulence, intelligence and learning, bodily beauty. Kunti Devi had them all herself. She didn't have any good luck, you could say, in the material sense, in many, for most of her life. It was a mixture. She had all the, she'd call all the demigods, but her life was full of suffering. So people, they may, someone's born in a high family, and they look down on people born in a lower family, which is just some, it's actually, it's a material designation. That's all. It's due to material designation, one caste is considered higher than another, one people or race is considered better than another, and I am born in this, and we are better than you. And you'll find all over the world that people, they whatever, different castes, or that's particular in India, or different people, or even different parts of the same city, or even within the same city, they have two football teams and they hate each other, the followers of the different football teams. There's this envy that I belong to a better group than you. Our football team beat your football team. If you just see the reality, it's a few people running around after a ball, and then they say our football team is better than yours because they succeeded in putting the ball between the sticks more than you did. But it's all meaningless. But we, for egoism, we ascribe meaning to that which has no meaning. And sports is a good example of that. So some people become puffed up because of what they achieved in this life. I did this, I did that. Some people become puffed up because of what they got in a previous life. They're born with that advantage. And some people are puffed up with absolutely no reason whatsoever. They've got nothing to be proud of, but still they're proud. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us, Trinadapi Sunichena Tarariva Sahishnuna Amanida Manadena Kirtaniya Sadaharihi. Easy to say. Easy to say. Even in bhakti, it's quite common that those who are good at getting things done, they may become proud also. I am a great preacher. I'm a great mridanga player. See, I play band. I'm a great singer. I made so many devotees. Oh, you see, I gave up so much to become a devotee. I had a big business. I had a great career. I gave it all up. I mean, sometimes devotees even say these things. It's surprising to hear. It sounds to me like childish. That they actually, I'd just like to let you know, as if we hadn't heard it already 2,000 times, that I was an engineer, a doctor, and this and that. So,
here's another one. See, I'm a very close associate of the guru. I have your photo taken with the prime minister. Hang it on your wall. Devotees are non-devotees. The prime minister never even looks at you when the photo is taken, and never even registered yet you're there. You're the 700th person he's had his photo taken with that week, but you have the photo on your wall. I'm
very close to the prime. Yes, actually, I'm very close to the prime minister, as if to say.
So like this, all ahankara vimurhatma. Some of the devotees that Srila Prabhupada made leaders in his movement, or they became leaders, Prabhupada, he had that among his many extraordinary attributes. He could see people who had some drive to get things done. So, arguably, some of the devotees that Prabhupada made leaders, it may be not so much because of their devotional qualifications, but they knew how to get things done in the world, which most of Prabhupada's disciples didn't, being hippies. They hippies means they prided themselves in being unworldly in all respects. So those who could organize people and organize the Sankirtan parties and get books printed and get the temple cleaned in the beginning, and then gradually it expanded into a whole worldwide movement. So those who Srila Prabhupada gave position to, to execute the position of a leader, you don't want a dreamy sadhu who's just out there in the ether somewhere, but someone who's got his 2 feet on the ground, as the saying goes, and they're capable and focused, strong-minded. But then, Prabhupada, he gathered around him, as what you could call his inner coterie, more devotees who were doers than dreamers. Because Prabhupada, he wanted to get something done. Not that he was in the mood of kartaham, but in the mood of we have to do something to serve Krishna. And we don't see that Prabhupada, he tried to smash out the egoism in those who, because many of those who were the doer types, arguably they were quite egoistic also. Because if you have the, I can get things, Prabhupada, I'll get it done. I'll do it for you, Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, once he brought one of his most capable GBCs, who was very efficient, very good organizer, brought him to India, where Prabhupada was, he had to personally oversee everything. He'd bring in one leader after another. They'd all collapse, the heat and the mosquitoes and the complete cultural difference and the diarrhea and everything. Usually, it was very difficult for Prabhupada to get anyone capable to take charge of the movement. And once, as it was narrated to me, and I can believe it also, one of Srila Prabhupada's most capable leaders in the West came in as a householder, a GBC man, with all nicely pressed clothes, and came and said, "Yes, Prabhupada, just tell me, I'll get it done." And within the course of the next 2 weeks, you saw gradually his confidence decreasing, and his clothes, they looked less and less smart, and in 2 weeks he was gone. Couldn't take it anymore. That was it. It was too difficult for him.
So, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't try. Sometimes you hear about like the Zen Buddhist gurus who do all kinds of wacko things to take, you know, remove the ahankar in their disciples and make them stand in the cold for 3 days, and if they don't freeze to death, then they say, okay, you can come in, or something like that. But Prabhupada didn't do that. He engaged devotees in devotional service. And he insisted that, okay, you do your devotional service, you get all your things done. Prabhupada wanted that done. He was pleased with that. But he also insisted, you come and hear every day. You attend Mangal Arati. He said, your first duty as a leader is to see that everyone attends the Mangal Arati, 4 regulative principles, 16 rounds. That's your main duty. Then on top of that, I mean, that's quite an achievement in itself. On top of that, if you can, you know, you have to preach and get books translated and books printed and so many things. But the first thing is this. And it said the leaders, they had to set the example personally, because Srila Prabhupada is confident that if people apply themselves to the process of bhakti, that they will become purified. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada attacked the ego also in different ways. Nice, you could say nice ways and shocking ways also. There's with Tamal Krishna Maharaj once, says that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was known as a great doer and as a very strong-minded leader. So once Srila Prabhupada called Tamal Krishna, I think he was a householder at that time, to take prasad with him, with Prabhupada, which was practically unheard of. Then afterward, Prabhupada showed, he brought Tamal in, as he was called often. There was this painting of all the Vaikuntha worlds, and then the Mahavishnu, and then one universe, and Prabhupada gave a tour of the universe. So here are all the Vaikuntha worlds, and then one small, vast expanse of the Vaikuntha worlds. In one small corner, Mahavishnu is lying there. From him come so many universes, and in each universe there's a Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Then in half the expanse of the universe there are all the planets. Within all the planets there's this one small planet called Earth. On this small planet called Earth there's this country called America. Within America there's this little city called Los Angeles. Within Los Angeles there's this neighborhood, Culver City or whatever, wherever they were. Within that Culver City there's one street, and within that street there's this little house, and within that little house there's Tamal Krishna thinking he's the lord of everything. There's another time also. I mean, we can say, I hope that people don't misunderstand this, that I'm like trying to posthumously get on the case of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, but Srila Prabhupada did invest a lot of mercy in him that we can learn from. So one time Srila Prabhupada, that Tamal Krishna Maharaj had built up the whole Radha Damodar party, and then Prabhupada said, you just go to China and leave. Leave all that and go to China. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said that, what about all my buses? All my men? Prabhupada said, you don't have any buses, you don't have any men, they're all my buses, they're all my men. So like this. But generally, Prabhupada would encourage and he wanted devotees that could get things done. In fact, anyway, there are so many stories. I better move on, I guess. Shall I stop or shall we have a late breakfast? Have a late breakfast, okay. So where are we going in my... Yeah, so Prabhupada stressed that, because with the understanding that if there's a lot of ego, if there's some bhakti and the stress is given to the bhakti, then bhakti will purify. So Srila Prabhupada had that confidence. But especially after Srila Prabhupada left and his personal supervision of these strong leaders, only he could lead them. That's the title of one of the chapters in Prabhupada Lilamrita, like the hippies. It's like, do your own thing. That was one of the mottos of the hippies. Again, it's like my way, very egoistic. They don't accept anyone's guidance. It's just completely egoistic, actually. So Prabhupada, only he could lead them. So after Prabhupada left, some of the strong-minded leaders, in their zeal to spread the movement very widely, there was a very competitive mood among the leaders to show who could be the best and distribute the most books and have the biggest zone and have the biggest temples and all this. So in their zeal to expand the movement, they often caused trouble to others. And because after all, strong-minded people or egoistic people, they can do many things in Krishna consciousness also, but they can be very troublesome and difficult to live with. Often they become unpopular, or sometimes it's like they're popular because they look very attractive and the way they do things, but then when people come closer to them and they become discouraged when they see that someone may talk about talk about love and compassion and all this kind of thing, but then it's in some cases it's more talk than the real thing. So this guru post, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, among his famous instructions are Trinada Pisunichena Tarara Pisesha Amanina Amanadena Kirtaniya Sadahari, to be more humble than a blade of grass. One who is actually so, they will be loved by all. But one who is egoistic, they may even think, I'm trying to help others. But because it's all driven by a desire to be known as a benefactor of others, they can actually become unpopular. And then they wonder, why am I unpopular? I'm doing so much to help others and be nice to others. But it's like a persona, a mask, and behind it is something different. So one who's actually humble means free from egoism, free from ambition, simply desiring to serve Krishna without any personal desire, not even nadanam, najanam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I don't want followers. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says, Amar agyai guru haya. Be a guru on my order, not on your ahankar, but on my order you be a guru. So it seems contradictory that you're not supposed to have the desire for honor, but on the other hand you have to be a guru in which you have to have followers and be honored. So the guru role as the post of a spiritual leaders as atheists and sociologists and anti-cultists have noted, the role of a spiritual leader, it's like it can be the post, a position of ultimate egoism. If one thinks, I am the representative of God, so everything I do is perfect, no one can question, can be a very dangerous position unless one really internalizes the sense of being a servant, a selfless servant. Otherwise, one can do and say all the right things, like in a drama. But if there's nothing inside of any depth, guru means heavy, there's nothing, there's not really the very strong desire to fully surrender to Krishna and do everything for Krishna, and it becomes like that, it becomes like a drama. One may be thinking, I will be remembered as a great acharya, so you have to do so many things and so that you'll be remembered. But again, Krishna is in the heart. He knows everything that's going on. And if we actually want to serve Krishna, Krishna will be pleased. If we don't want to, or maybe actually often it's mixed. This desire to serve Krishna is mixed with some personal desire. It may be that someone comes in the beginning with a desire to serve Krishna, but later they get in the association of they because of their desire they come up in the hierarchy, the institutional hierarchy. Then they get to associate with persons who have mixed motives of showing themselves powerful. You have to follow the ISKCON law, and that means you have to follow me. They don't say that, but now, they are the arbitrator of the ISKCON law. You have to do what I say, which means I am the name of the title, and like this. And then by association, they become the people who start off humble and then actually wanting to serve Krishna. They may become, or they may just by themselves, they get some position, and all of a sudden the latent desire or the latent impurities become manifested. There's a saying that power corrupts. More accurately, that would be that as long as one is not in power, one might seem to be humble because you have to do what someone else says. But when you get the opportunity to, when there's no one checking you, then all the impure desires, you can indulge in them. So we can see what someone's character is. There's some quotation I saw, I can't remember who made it, years ago someone said that you can actually judge the character of a person by how he deals with people from whom he has got absolutely nothing to gain. Interesting observation, huh? I have to find my way through the jungle of my notes. Yeah, and so once someone is in some position and they have this kind of egoism, they won't listen to anyone. Well, it becomes very difficult for everyone. But even if generally everyone has this ego, it's difficult to say, I mean, it's difficult to go up to someone and say, like, you are very egoistic, and no one will accept. Or even if they accept, they won't. They say, well, what can I do? It's my nature. Well, it's not your nature. Their nature is to be a servant of Krishna. So this idea that, you know, I am right, everyone else, they're wrong. It's not necessarily even big men. Sometimes some, you know, just very small men, you could say. Big man, small man. In Krishna's eyes, who's big man? Someone comes, they have a little ability, and then they say, I'm doing so much. Like children. And then they're checked. And they don't get room to indulge their ahankar. Then they go away, saying, oh, these people are no good. So it's a problem. This ahankar is, this is the problem for all of us. That's what keeps us from being with Krishna. Why do we not advance even after so many years? Is because we maintain a sense of identity different from that of being a servant of Krishna. And even within devotional service, if we think, I am a great preacher, I am better than others, then that separates us from Krishna. So what to do about that? Well, I'm not going to talk about that now, because we're over time. Maybe another time I can speak about that. But that's the analysis that Krishna gives. Ahankara vimurhatma kartahamiti manyate. Out of a false sense of identity, thinks, I am the doer, but is actually extremely foolish to think so. So Arjuna was in that position. We are all in that position. And we should, instead of maintaining that foolishness, surrender to Krishna. Hare Krishna. I won't take any questions, no? Is that all right? I can speak some more about this. The obvious question is, what to do about it? Well, I guess that's another lecture. Not another lecture, another lifetime. Maybe many lifetimes.
Can I ask one question?
Now, how am I going to exhibit my egoism here? Either by snapping back at you, no. Or I can exhibit my egoism by appearing as a very reasonable person and saying, yes, yes. Then everyone will think, oh, he's very reasonable. Okay, I have to choose which kind of egoism I'm going to indulge in here.
I think it's a useful question. It's regarding etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
When, how much scope is there in advertising our preaching success? Like when we success, I mean when we do something.
Preaching success, yeah. How much scope is there for that? To advertise our preaching success can be done. If it's done with the right attitude, everyone will appreciate. If not, then we don't actually get the result of devotional service if we do it for the sake of thinking that others will praise me. I mean, those who are doing book distribution as a regular service, they all know. Maybe for a short time in a day, or maybe for a few weeks, or maybe even for a few years, you can do it on the platform of ego. Actually, usually not even for a few minutes. But then Krishna, if one is thinking, I'm doing, these people are all jerks, why aren't they taking books? Don't they know who I am? Don't you know I'm the world's number one distributor? You're so lucky to get books from me. Krishna just withdraws the mercy. So we can advertise for the sake of... there are different reasons we can advertise. One is for encouraging others, or maybe some transcendental competition there. One is just like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. He, on praising the glories of Nityananda Prabhu, he speaks about how he is Mahavishnu, how he is Balaram who serves Krishna in all respects, how... What is that? Purna, Purna Chaitanya. Nityananda Purna Kare Chaitanyara Kam. How is Nityananda? He also fulfills all Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desires. And then at the end of that chapter, he says there's one more aspect of Nityananda's mercy, which I shouldn't say, but then if I don't say, it would not be, if I shouldn't say, because he doesn't say why he shouldn't say, but it's like advertising himself. But then if he says, Krishnadas says that if I don't say, then it would also be not proper, I wouldn't be properly glorifying Nityananda Prabhu. So then he says, Krishnadas Kaviraj relates how once there was a festival in his house, Vaishnava festival, and one great devotee, one of the Dwadash Gopal, one of the 12 associates of Nityananda Prabhu, Meena Ketan Ramdas was there. And there was a priest, Vaishnav priest, who was also there, who had great devotion for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but no faith in Nityananda. So Meena Ketan Ramdas, he chastised that priest, who didn't say anything because he was involved in doing the puja and all this. But then at night, that night, there was some discussion between Krishnadas Kaviraj and Krishnadas' own brother, who sympathized with the priest, with the pujari, and said that, yes, we can accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but we can't accept Nityananda. So then Krishnadas chastised his brother, and he said that because of the good quality of chastising my brother, that night in a dream, Nityananda came in my dream. And he ordered me that, what is that, Vrindavan Jao Jahab, and I can't remember, it's very nice Bengali, but I'm not remembering it just now. Jahab. All your desires will be fulfilled in Vrindavan. So the next morning, Krishnadas got up and left home. He had an argument with his brother, that may seem to be the external cause, but actually Nityananda ordered him. Jao Vrindavana Jahas Sarva Labhyahoy. You will get everything there. So he went to Vrindavan, he came to Vrindavan, and then shortly after coming there, all the Vaishnavas, all the Vaishnavas ordered him to compile Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the later pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he said, Krishnadas writes that in Vrindavan, I got the shelter of Rupa and Raghunath and all the great Vaishnavas. I got the mercy of Madan Gopal, the deity, and by all their mercy, I'm able to compile this Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he describes the great mercy of Nityananda Prabhu upon him, not in a manner of praising himself, but in a manner of praising Nityananda Prabhu. So in that way, if we don't say some kind of humility, if we don't describe our preaching and what successes are there, we may think that's humility, but another way it can be egoism, because we're thinking, I did it, and therefore I shouldn't tell anyone else. It's humility based on egoism. But if we say, just see the mercy of Prabhupada, so many wonderful things are happening. In that way we can do. So by not saying, that, just like Krishnadas Kaviraj, he wrote, if I don't tell this, that will also be a fault. So it's very subtle. What is the position of our mind? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Hare Krishna.